It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Thank you so much for joining us on a wild weekend, at least in terms of the weather. A lot of stuff going on here in downtown Detroit from our vantage point at the high towers of the Fisher Building here at WJR, 760 AM, our place on the dial in Detroit and in your homes as well through our network. We've got scams to talk about today. We're going to see if we can bust up some of those phishing scams trying to fool you and me and talk about applications in cars. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown. My posse is in studio. Gary Baker, how you doing?
I'm doing well today. Thanks.
Brought another computer in for some work.
I have three, if you look.
The shop
three
is open.
Three of them right around me.
This is why it's called the Internet Advisor. And our techs do a lot of side jobs when we're in studio.
My wife got a new Win8 computer.
Ooh.
Touchscreen. Very nice. And I have a little problem setting it up. So what do? You talk to the Internet Advisor,
well,
and especially Ed Riddell's.
That's right. So, Eddie, you're going to be tinkering with that then, huh?
I'm so glad I came in today.
Me too.
It's like a regular job.
And so does Carol.
And as well, the man from the Mac, Cal Carson.
Good you know, here. I'm so glad that I'm not a Windows guy.
Yeah.
Because then I wouldn't have to end up being the Baker Ballet.
Ah.
But you see, if he had a Mac, we wouldn't even be going down this line anyway.
That's
I'd be
true.
Going like, hey, how's it going? He'll go, just fine. It just works.
Ah, yes. Yeah. It does.
But moving everything from one to the other?
It just works.
So,
well, he's being a little generous.
Yeah, so my problem is that I'm moving it from one to the other, but everything's in the cloud. So, of course, it doesn't matter. I should be able to make it work on every computer, right?
Well, couldn't you use that Windows migration wizard to be able to move that back
and
forth?
Yeah, so that's what I got to do. But I have one question. So Eddie's going to help me.
I see.
There are some challenges doing that, by the way. A clean install sometimes is preferred because of some problems. Well, I had some problems when I migrated Jenny's old computer to the Windows 8 platform. Mm-hmm. But by the way, folks, next week we're going to be talking a lot more about Windows 8 because Windows 8.1 was announced this week, right?
Right. It's in very limited preview. Next month it goes into full preview mode. And then by fall or the end of the year, they'll be releasing the full version of Windows 8.1.
Right. And that is, by the way, what the old SP, the service packs, used to be. Essentially, that's what this is, I think.
In essence, but it's going to do some modifications. Yes,
yeah.
Cal.
Question.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Is the start button coming back?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I hope not.
Yes.
No.
You know what? We'll see. I mean, they're going to give you the option to configure the unit so you can boot into the Metro interface, which Microsoft hates that name.
Yeah.
So the Windows 8 interface.
The Fisher
or the legacy
interface.
Get out of here.
And they're going to provide a new button or hotkey that.
Well, it's going to look like the old Windows logo that was down on the left-hand side on the bottom, and it will trigger different things.
Yeah,
yes.
But you know, now you have a Windows key on the keyboard.
I know.
And you just use that instead of
I know.
Pointing your. It's even
it's
easier.
For people who didn't want to.
It's actually easier.
You know, I've heard of stubborn, stubborn at the how much money they're losing. You know, how much profits they're losing because they're digging in their heels and they're not going to give us back our start button.
But instead of the start button, you have a start key. So you can hit the
key instead of moving
the mouse.
I'm going to give them one play on the Windows side. Yes, they are being stubborn. But remember, even on the Mac side, one day they came in and they said, you know something? No more floppy drives.
Yeah.
And people go like, oh! No,
yeah, exactly.
And you know, floppy drives went away on the Mac, and no one's crying today.
Yeah, right.
And now they're doing the optical drives. They go like, yeah, no more optical drives.
People don't like change. And people, you know, when I tell somebody that, they'll go, oh, well, I'm pretty change ready. And I said, yeah, maybe, but nobody likes change. And they went, oh, yeah, I am. And I said, I'll prove it. Nobody likes to get into a shower, and no one wants to get out of a shower. Right? You just don't want to change.
Yeah.
I have to say, by the way, that I think Apple is facing some big challenges this year as well with their operating system. iOS 7 is going to be a lot demanded of it, Cal. And it'll be interesting to see
how
they come
up with
it. Oh,
without a doubt. Once again, as Gary just said, it's going to be changing.
Oh, and it's going to be a lot of howling, and it's going to be a lot of, where's my old, and fill in the blank. I want to just move on, if we could, a little bit quickly, because, Ed, I want you to talk about something. We have a guest in studio here, one of our listeners, Len Michaels. And first, Len, just may say hello to you, and thank you very much for being here. Hit, press that red on button there.
Got
there
it.
You go. How you doing?
I am doing well. Appreciate you guys having us here today.
Thank you. You've been listening to the program for a while, I understand.
Well, not as long as you've been broadcasting.
But we're delighted you could be with us. Len is kind of here to represent other listeners out there because you received a letter from PayPal, which you were concerned might be a scam. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a segment coming up, along with Gary, that he got something from Amazon. I wanted to touch on one thing because it's so topical. And that, Ed, was an alert that you received last night, am I right?
No, it was the Tuesday when the tornadoes came through Goodrich and in the Flint area, yes.
Tell me what happened. You were in the basement of the house, and suddenly what happened?
We were in the basement of the house, and I looked at my pager because I was looking at AccuWeather application, and I noticed I had a page. And what looked like a page, I thought it was, oh, it's my Facebook. It was a big F. The F didn't stand for Facebook. I believe it stood for FEMA.
Wow. Oh, wow. Go ahead. And what did it say?
It basically said the same thing that was broadcast on the television. Take cover immediately. Tornadoes in the area. High winds. That type of thing.
And that was about 10 minutes before that big storm cell went right through your area, right?
Exactly.
And hit Goodrich.
Yes. And this was the first time that this application has been activated in Michigan.
And you didn't set anything up on your computer,
did you? So you know. If you have a smartphone that's within the last couple of years, it's been purchased in the last couple of years, it's automatically turned on by default. They're working, FEMA's working with all the major carriers to enable this feature.
Wow.
It's based on your location, based on the Verizon and the towers, and they broadcast
it. Because this is the fascinating thing. Did you get an alert that night?
Well, no, you're not supposed to.
That's exactly it.
Not unless you're directly in the path of the storm, and they can tell where you are.
Exactly.
Because of the cell.
And this is how brilliant it is. For instance, WJR, our flagship station, is the hub for the emergency activation notices. That when the signal goes out here, everybody else gets alerted. So this is one of the key points for sending. But we broadcast it, so everybody hears it. This is targeted now.
Right.
Apparently, we don't have to do anything about it. And Ed, as you said, if you happen to be driving through the area, boom.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
because it's called you're connected to that cell, not because of where you live.
And it's called the Wireless Emergency Alerts, WEA.
Wow.
And I haven't found it on my phone, so I can enable it or disable it.
So it's there, probably through your provider, as you said.
And there were tornadoes that touched down in Goodrich. So
great alert. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, where we just work, right?
Well,
that motto has to work here, too. Stealing an old Apple saw. Well, we have in studio with us, and I introduced him quickly a little bit before the break, and want to reintroduce him, Len Michaels, who is one of our listeners. Len, you got in touch with us this past month about a letter that you had received from PayPal. And that is an organization that you've been using, I'm pretty sure, for doing business, probably.
It was.
Carefully. Use it for online purchases, right? Uh-huh. And then you received a letter from them or an email.
Actually, it was an email.
An email from them. Okay.
It's an email.
And what was it saying? What did it want you to do?
Well, I'm an eBayer, okay, and I buy things on eBay, and then I pay for them on through PayPal. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this for probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 years. And with the most recent purchase, after I did that, I got an email from PayPal, which I've never received before, telling me that I had to verify my account, that I only had like $110 left to pay for items.
Yeah.
And that was the first flag because, as I said, after 10 or 12 years in dealing with these folks,
this is the first time
I get this email saying they want to verify my account.
Ooh. So what were they asking you to do?
They're asking me to go into my bank account and forward them my routing number and all the other numbers that are associated with checking accounts. And
okay, so let me stop you right there.
Okay.
I want to know if any of the other guys on the team would have responded to that.
Well, let me ask a few questions. Did you respond in any way to them, or was this all in the first message?
I did respond because there was a telephone number to call. And so I called the number.
Okay, good. But you didn't click on anything.
No.
Excellent.
Let's stop, because that's very important. The clicking is where we can get in trouble.
That's right.
Because that's where they can bushwhack you with phishing. You did the really smart thing, which was to go to that phone number.
Now, the phone number probably wasn't PayPal's, right?
You know, I'm going to say no at this point, but I'm not really sure because the person that I contacted to, I couldn't understand the person.
Oh, so it might have been.
It could have.
It's really hard to tell nowadays. It really is with call centers going anywhere. You could be
in Malaysia or almost anywhere else.
I suspect that's where it was. Yeah. But then when I questioned the procedure, which was that after I gave them all this information about my banking account, etc., that they would make small deposits in my banking account, checking account, so I would know that this was on the level. And I asked the woman, I said, well, is that true? And she says, oh, very, very definitely true.
Yep.
And I'd
still be suspicious.
I hung up. I didn't pursue it any further.
You're fine with what I would do, guys. I don't know.
But when you first set up a PayPal account, in order for them to confirm it, they actually deposit a few cents, a penny transition.
I do remember that.
Yep.
Yes. So,
but in this particular case, I wouldn't be suspicious at all.
Why?
I know exactly that it was spam, and because they just don't do that. That's not how they contact their customers.
Okay, we're going to tell the rest of the story then.
Why
don't you hear the rest of the story then? Go ahead, Len.
Well, what I did subsequent to that was I went into my PayPal account and I logged in with my password and I spoke to a real person this time. And my initial fears or apprehensions were a bit premature because I found out that there is a verification process they go through. And they do deposit small amounts of money into your checking account.
Sure they do.
Anywhere from a penny to 99 cents.
Yep.
But again, my concern was that why would they do something like this after 10 or 12 years?
Right.
And,
and did the telephone number really go to PayPal?
The first one or the second one?
Well, the second one, you logged into the account.
Yes.
So you knew that went to PayPal.
It did.
Did you ask them about the first one?
I didn't ask her about the phone number, but I asked her about the emails. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, we don't normally send emails out to people.
That's right.
Then she went through the process about how to identify, spam or phishing emails, et cetera.
Good. Now, let's stop there again because I think this is another important point. The number in the first letter could have been bogus as well. And I think I would have hung up just as you did. But as Gary's pointed out, when you go to the PayPal site and go through the number that there, you're going independently. That's a wise move.
That's right. And that's what you need to do.
Right.
So I had a similar problem this last week. It wasn't a problem because I knew exactly what it was. But I verified. I trusted that it was spam, but I verified. And that was I got an email from Amazon that looks exactly like your receipt. And it said, congratulations, your TV has been shipped. And the TV was over $1,000. It was a really nice TV from Amazon. And it was going to be shipped to somebody I didn't know and to an address in Alabama. So, first of all, obviously they're not shipping it to me. One of two things could be happening, and I needed to verify. First, if somebody really did hack into my account and really did order a TV using my credit card and having it shipped to them or one of their friends, I thought that would be interesting for me and for Amazon to know as soon as possible. So what I did was, I assumed that it was spam and it wasn't right, but I verified it. I went into my Amazon account, I looked at my orders, and that order didn't exist. So Amazon didn't know that the TV was being shipped from Amazon to this person in Alabama. On the show, I said, all right, I'm going to check to see if that person existed. Well, a lot of people with that name existed, but none of them lived in that town in Alabama. Well, in fact, there was no town in Alabama. That town doesn't exist. The address didn't exist. So it was interesting just to find that out. But what they did was it looked exactly like you would get from Amazon.
An invoice. I saw it. It was exactly the same as an invoice, yeah.
And because it was $1,000 and a really nice TV, what they wanted to do, what the bad guys wanted to do, was they wanted to elicit a really strong emotional reaction from me. I didn't order that. It's being shipped to somebody else. My account's been hacked. I better. And I click on a link to contact Amazon. And that's where they get you.
Yep. And that when you're fishing, that's the hook, Len. And that was, I think, some of what we've been talking about. A key piece of advice here is that in that initial in piece of information you receive, that's where the hooks are buried.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you respond there, and you did wisely with the phone call when you were uncomfortable with it, you dropped it. That's great. But then when you go in independently, you go behind the hooks. Mm-hmm. And that's where, and I guess that's the general lesson out there for all of us on this. We're not going to have a lot of time to talk about this, but Len, you're going to stick around the studio with us.
We will.
Gary, as we go on, we're going to talk
about it. We asked you to come in because every one of us has gotten, you know, PayPal, Amazon, Best Buy, somebody.
Citibank.
And this is an opportunity for you to tell your story to people out there listening to us so they don't get caught.
I can't tell you the number of emails that we get from people. A friend of mine got a letter from AT&T. Is this real? And you can't tell anymore because the English bad spellings that used to be the giveaway aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And but I just wanted to commend you on the process.
In Amazon, they do ask you to report anytime this happens to you. So I went into their spam reporting, and I copied the email and sent it to them, and I got a letter back or an email back that said, "Yep, you're absolutely right. That's spam. That didn't come from us, and you don't have that order. Don't worry about it." Which I knew I didn't have to because it wasn't in my orders. But you know, they're now going out. They'll try to correlate that with other spam messages they got, and they'll slowly but surely be able to hone in on the bad guys where they're coming from.
Did they ask you to send that initial communication to them to check for the spam?
No, they didn't.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, Gary, what you were saying about, you know, they're trying to stop that. Well, PayPal has a disclaimer on their website also, but it's at the very bottom of the website, and it's in the smallest print you ever saw. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, that should be up front.
Absolutely. You know, especially nowadays.
Nowadays is absolutely right. Everybody is concerned.
And by the way, as an eBayer, are out front in that e-commerce area. eBayers were way out there a long time ago. Buying and selling things and trying to do it securely. We found that Western Union couldn't be trusted, for instance. Mm-hmm. A lot of problems with that, and PayPal was one of the very secure ones. Okay,
Len Michaels. You, telling your story helps everybody else, too.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Len is in studio with us. We've got some tips, by the way, on our homepage at internetadvisor.net from Microsoft about mobile security. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Coming up in just a moment, applications for your... Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, one of our listeners, Len Michaels in studio with us. But right now we're going to turn our attention to our cars and to some old friends of ours. With us on our show right now, I'd like to welcome a young lady named Nicole Yellen. She is the director of marketing for Livio Radio. It's a little company in Ferndale, which has now changed its name to Livio Connectedness. Just doing that is connecting people. Jake Stiegel, you may remember many years ago, guys, when he came in with his radio.
Oh, his radio, and before that, the USB LP recorder.
That's exactly
right.
It. Well, he's stepped well beyond that, hasn't he, Nicole?
Yeah, we're moving into cars, and we're making sure that we're getting everything that you love on your phone directly in the car where you can access it and control it.
That's exactly it. As you guys know, working with car companies, they all, like Ford has the MySync, and Chrysler has Uconnect, and GM, I'm trying to think of what the
GM...
Well, they have
MyLink and OnStar system.
And they also have another one that they use. Is it MyGM? Or is it called MyTech? I forget.
It's MyLink, and then
MyLink, pardon.
Has Q.
That's right. So what the problem has been is there's all these, if you will, different languages out there. Who's going to be an interpreter to get an application safely into one of those systems? Mm-hmm. And that's where Livio has stepped in, haven't they, Nicole?
Yeah, we are focused heavily on making sure that no matter what app it is, if you get a car and you have a favorite app, that is working in your dashboard very safely and simply. And we work with the OEMs to make sure that you don't have to look around.
We're seeing, as a matter of fact, I do some narration work for GM, and it's interesting that I do the part about the electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to me is that they're trying to simplify their screens, but you'll see certain applications put right up front as simple icons, and that's in other words, it's getting much easier to use that interface. Now, Nicole, you have with us on the line here Manuela Papadopoul, who is the Director of Global Marketing for one of your clients, Electrobit. Manuela, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for being with us.
Hi. Great to be with you. It's exciting.
I understand. Are we talking with you at some distance here?
Yes, you are. I'm currently in Germany. We're celebrating the win of FC Bayern.
Over Dortmund. What a game. What a game. I know. I watch it over and over. But I think that Bayern will be celebrating for quite a while.
And it's got to be, what, 10:30 there?
It's 10:30.
Yeah. Well, thank you for
but
getting.
It's never too late for technology.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for interrupting your celebration at the bar.
Now, talk to me about ElectroBit, which is your application that has worked with Libio now to be installed in some cars. What does your application do?
Right. So EV Automotive has been around for over 25 years, pretty much redefining the world of driving through software. Mm-hmm. We have software that addresses the driver assistance, the user experience, the navigation, and also the electronic control units. And with Livio, since they have this amazing technology that connects the consumer electronic devices with the car, it can interact very well with our HMI tools as well as the navigation to make the driver much more exciting and safer, as Nicole has said.
Yes, and I would imagine that a good deal of that is hands-off. It's voice-activated. Am I right in that, Manuela?
It is voice-activated. There's also the trend of the head-up display. As you know, the real estate in the car has moved from the in-dash into the digital instrument cluster, like you very well pointed with the GM cue.
Right.
And MyLink, and also moving up into the head-up display.
Explain head-up for people, because this is something really that you are going to be seeing more and more of, folks. In other words, you won't have to shift your gaze to the right to a separate panel. As a matter of fact, that's interesting. In some of the GM vehicles we've been talking about, they've moved deliberately out of the way, and it's not a touchscreen, because they don't want you reaching over and touching anything. And your information is in front of you then, right in that what's called the IP center, the driver information center, or the DIC very often. That's that heads up. So that, in other words, it kind of appears almost like on the windshield in front of you, right?
That is correct. Right. And car makers are addressing that real estate based on their vehicle type as well as their target audience, so
right.
Addressing their drivers. So in a high-end vehicle, you would see the entire head-up display being used, the entire windshield being displayed as a screen, where in lower-end vehicles, you would see just a smaller part. Nevertheless, the experience can be the same, and the content that you have on your phone could be displayed over there for a safer and much better experience.
So
you could imagine doing drags and drops from your in-dash into the windshield.
Yeah.
And this isn't really new technology. We're hoping that this doesn't encourage anybody to speed up, because this technology's been in jets for a long time, right? So we don't want anybody. We don't want anybody pretending they're in a jet out there. And
well, as a matter of fact, some of the
accelerator down.
Some of the technology is working that it will deliberately slow you down if you get too close to a car in front of you,
for instance.
So Manuela, your challenge with ElectroBit was to get all this great software, this interactive stuff, to work in the vehicles here. And then, how did Livio, Nicole, play into that?
As Nicole points, Nicole?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say really quickly,
yeah.
we're not yet working together, but that doesn't mean that, you know, our companies aren't all friends, because, you know, when it comes to getting apps and cars and keeping people safe, we're all on the same team. So.
I get over enthusiastic, because another guest we were going to talk about, which is TuneIn Radio, is one that you've worked with. But the idea would be, what is a service that you would offer ElectroBit?
So ElectroBit is on the hardware side. So they have the stuff that goes in the cars that can potentially communicate with applications. So Livio Connect works on both the application side and the hardware side, and the software inside of the hardware side.
And you guys, the genius of what you're doing is that you're kind of an interpreter, like a middleware, if you will.
We are exactly a middleware.
Exactly. So what vehicles... Manuela Papadopoulos is with us. She's the director of global marketing for ElectroBit, and where they're celebrating in Bayern, Germany right now, the victory of the Bayern team in the world soccer. But Manuela, what vehicles are you targeting right now that we might see your products in?
I'm pretty sure you're already driving one.
Ooh, okay.
Like I said, we've been working with the automotive industry for over 25 years. We are the global software integrator for FordSync. We took AppLink to global markets. We have developed the HMI, so the user experience in the GMQ. The MyLink is using our navigation. The entire Volkswagen group is using our navigation.
Wow.
HMI Electronic Horizon, which is the next the next key differentiator. BMW is using our ECUs and AUTOSAR. So pretty
wow.
much the entire automobile.
Wow, that is, you know, in many ways you've been playing behind the scenes, and I don't think you mind being that, if you will, the genius behind the curtain, but it's fascinating to hear about that. By the way, now, Nicole, there is a special meetup that is coming to the Detroit area this coming week, June the 5th on Wednesday. It's going to be at, it's going to be in Novi at 29 Park. Could you talk a little bit about what that is going to be and how it ties in with our conversation?
Absolutely. And that is how we are working together with Electrobit. They're one of our kind sponsors, along with TuneIn, helping us to put together a great party for anyone that works in automotive application or members of the press. And essentially, it's going to be free drinks, free food, a great time and a great opportunity to network after telematics update on Wednesday in Novi. And you know, just anybody who's in the industry and wants to network and meet another person, because in one way or another, we get apps into cars, and we think it's really important for app developers and car, the car tech people to be talking to one another on the supplier side, the manufacturer side, and certainly getting press in the same room so everyone can be talking the same language.
That's great. Now, folks, that'll be taking place. If you happen to be in the industry, and there's a lot of people listening to us who are in many ways involved in the car industry, and as you pointed out, I think, Manuela, you were talking about 25 years of involvement in the car industry, and I think one of you talked about the fact that in many ways, and Gary, we've said this, the car industry we think of as a heavy manufacturing thing, but it has been light years ahead in a lot of electronic processes and software and just
Bill
really
Gates called
edge.
It a really big computer on wheels, so.
Yes.
And you look, he was a little biased, maybe.
But. Kel?
That's right. Well, they are also very involved in this industry. But I'd like to point out the importance of the connected services and the role that companies like Livio play in this spectrum. Like you've pointed out, the software is taking over the car, and that's very important, and it needs to be done in a very safe and secure way. But the role of the vehicle will definitely continue to be redefined and extended beyond just the regular transportation.
Yes.
You'll see the vehicle becoming your office and your mobile communication.
Yes, so many, many things. Manuela, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Manuela Papadopoul, and she is the Director of Global Marketing for Electrobit. Nicole Yellen, thank you so much for being with us from Livio. Information and your ability to RSVP to that event are on our homepage as well at internetadvisor.net. Welcome back, and as this time on the internet every week, we welcome Mr. Mike Brennan, who is with us on the phone, and he brings us his very special view of what's going on in the news in Michigan for entrepreneurs and cutting-edge technology, mytechnews.com. Mike, welcome to the program this week.
Thanks, Foster. I was listening to your previous segment, and my ears perked up when I heard something about a press event with free booze, so I guess that's next Wednesday, right?
That's next Wednesday, yes. Go to the homepage, internetadvisor.net, and join the rest of the press at the watering hole.
There you go. Well, that's always the way to get your event covered, is free food and free liquor, and I'll guarantee the press will come. So.
Having worked with the press for many years, that's my first experience. Auto show?
Yeah, absolutely.
Open bar.
I wanted to mention that Apple CEO Tim Cook was at a conference in California last week and talking about, well, let's talk about Apple TV devices. They've got 13 million of these set-top boxes out there, and that's really the new wave in TV. It's going to be coming off the internet versus coming off a satellite or coming off cable, and you're going to be able, you know, I got to tell you, I mean, I won't tell you which service I have, but I hate those services where you really only watch 10 of the channels, but you pay for about 150. So.
Yeah, my bill has gone up to $160-some-odd with basic HD, no special packages.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of what's happening, what will happen soon, and what is beginning to happen, is that we'll have internet TV where you can essentially choose off a menu and get the programming that you really want and are willing to pay for. Mm-hmm. And then Cook also talked about or hinted that Apple's going to be coming out with some kind of wearable computer. I don't know if that's going to be this year, but And what is wearable? I mean, it's on your person somewhere. It could be embedded in your clothes. I mean, Google is attacking it with Google Glass, which is a little, almost like a little optical lens that fits over your glasses, and then you can look at a computer screen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everybody's coming up with all these different ways. We're already pretty mobile already. I mean, mobility is where it's at with the internet, and now we're going to get more plugged in, as it were. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, also, our good friends, the Chinese, are at it again. They're now openly admitting that they have a military forces that they're training for cyber warfare. Of course, Richard Seenan and I covered that pretty extensively in a book that we did.
Right.
Same culprit, same MO. But I mean, it's just, again, I'm at all these security conferences all the time, and I'm simply amazed that business just doesn't take this very seriously yet. So
that's astounding.
There's some talk that it may take some sort of cyber 9/11 to wake everybody up, and, you know, let's not do this after the horse gets out of the barn, right?
Oh,
you know?
Lord, no, please. It could be an entire crash of an infrastructure.
Oh, gosh, it's just, especially with the industrial controls that are controlled by SCADA, that's just wide open. Anybody mm-hmm. can hack that, so mm-hmm. even script kiddies. There's an event coming up here next Tuesday in Grand Rapids. The West Michigan Science and Technology Initiative has changed its name to GR Current. So they're having a mixer that they call their Rooftop Happy Hour. I'm guaranteed I'll be there. You know,
another happy hour. Okay.
The free liquor, they go, yeah. They go, okay, we got it covered. They got 400 people coming, and it's the Grand Rapids Smart Zone, really tied into healthcare and what's going on with Spectrum Health and Van Andel Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't really got a lot of traction yet, but I think it will. I mean, you know, all these healthcare plays, as we all know, take forever to develop. But they brought in a new director, and they're really making an effort to reach out to all the other groups in the West Michigan area that work with entrepreneurs and technology. So I wish them luck, and again, I'll be there even if they don't serve me free liquor. So,
well, speaking about West Michigan, let's swing back over toward East Michigan. What's happening over by Midland, one of my favorite towns?
Oh, yeah, I just attended that event on Thursday. It was joining the big leagues. I can't remember the exact name. I think it is. It's something they've done for 5 years, heading for the big leagues. There we go. I knew it was one of those. And so they had an event, the all-day event in the morning. It was 300 or 400 people showed up. They had a lot of experts that came in. One of the people that attended the event called it a laser shot to MBA because they really touched on a lot of the issues that entrepreneurs just, you know, you're good at something, right? That's why you're starting the company, but you're not good at everything, I can guarantee it. And so that program went on. They also had in the afternoon an awards program where a lot of the people that have been working with the Mid-Michigan Innovation Center were lauded and given awards. And then I had a couple panel discussions that I sat in on, how to fund, how to work with angel investors and how to get funding and, you know, marketing and all that jazz. So attendance, they also had booths where they had a lot of the major companies in the area involved in technology primarily, and they were up 20%. So, I mean, I travel all over the state, like Gary does, and everywhere you go, everything is upbeat and getting better, and I'm really positive about the direction we're headed in.
You know, Mike Brennan, this is the neat thing that you do with the MyTechNews.com. And people, by the way, you can subscribe to an entire newsletter that has all of this stuff. It really is keeping its finger. Mike keeps his finger on the pulse of both technology and entrepreneurship in the state of Michigan. And it's neat to feel a nice, strong pulse there, Mike. And thank you every week for connecting us with that. But, folks, you can go to MyTechNews.com. You can link to that off of our Internet Advisor homepage. And you can get to see the entire list with a lot more information in detail, maybe for you and your particular area that you're listening to us on the Michigan Talk Network. There's a meeting coming up like the one in Grand Rapids that you can go to. So please do take advantage of that. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Foster.
Can't wait to hear your report on the next open bar. Meeting.
No problem. We'll get it covered.
All right. Take care, Mike Brennan. Good to have you with us here on the Internet Advisor every week. And that is Mike. Guy, I want to bring Len back in. Len? Lynn Michaels is with us. Lynn joined us at the beginning of the program talking about you had a letter from PayPal that you kind of were a little suspicious about. You've been an eBay user for a long time. And what things has stuck out when our first conversation where Gary was involved with his Amazon thing, what point stuck out to you most if you would think for our listeners that they ought to catch?
Well, I think what stands out for me and why I didn't do it was something I heard from you guys, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. If you get something that you think is even the slightest suspicious, not to touch that link, not to go right to it, and do what I did, call you guys.
Call Ghostbusters, right?
Ghostbusters.
So, and that's really important, and that's something that, Len, I think you being here will help us drive home to a lot of people listening, which is even if you're interested in whatever the spammer is sending you, as soon as you click on a link, one of a few things can happen. At the very minimum amount of problem will be they have your email address. They now know it's live. They know that you respond to spam, so they're going to send you a lot more of it. And then worse than that, it could be they could download a keylogger. They could actually download another
or Trojan of some kind,
a Trojan or a virus rootkits that could gain some access to your personal information, or just turn your machine into a bot that spams others, right?
So what they're using is like social engineering to get past your defenses so that they can install some malicious software on your computer.
And that social engineering is what Gary said, that $1,000, oh my Lord!
Because antivirus software and firewall software that's integrated with the operating systems is good.
Yep.
It's not the best. It probably could be better, but the weakest point is us.
Yeah,
and
the
smart guy, Len Michaels here, thank you much for being with us. I think you've been kind of a spokesperson for a lot of our listeners. Thank you for joining us in studio.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for having us.
And we will come back in just a little bit after the top of the hour with our phone lines open. We've already got some folks waiting there. Karen from Rochester Hills will be with you. And if you have a question, kind of like what Len emailed us, his question, you can do that if you listen to us on our network. But if you're listening to us live now on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, here's the number, 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Give us a call right away. We'll line you up, and we'll see if we can help you with your problems. Thank you for listening to the Internet Advisor. Don't forget to visit our homepage, internetadvisor.net. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Cal Carson. We're with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell. We'll be here for the next hour giving you the best in Internet advice. We'll be taking your calls at 1-800-859-0WJR. That's 1-800-859-0957. So sit back, stay tuned, and let's enjoy another hour of the Internet Advisor on WJR.
Thank you for joining us for this exciting second hour of our program. You've been listening to us live on WJR Radio in Detroit. Phone number for you that's available right now is 800-859-0957. That's where you can call us. Or if you are like many of the people listening to us over the Michigan Talk Network on our affiliate stations, which are in a number of cities around Michigan, like Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Kalamazoo, and Muskegon, check for your listing time there on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Then you can send us an email, much like Len Michaels did, in which he talked about his problem with PayPal. And we can help tackle the problem there, too.
You know, I made that mistake. I sent Gary Baker an email about 8 or 9 years ago, and I'm still doing the show.
I love it. We're so glad for the answer that we got when we got in touch with you.
You know, so, it was so funny because, Foster, if you recall, Ed and I met through EDS. He came up to my office and he said, "You haven't called me yet. I'm the guy that's supposed to help executives, and if you don't like call me, I'll lose my job. So you gotta, you know, you gotta use me, right?"
I
said, "Wait a minute, Ed. You can explain technology to our executives?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "So they understand it?" He goes, "Yeah, most of the time." And I said, "Then you gotta come on the show. If you can do that, you can explain it to anybody." So, and he said, "I think I'll come on as a guest, but not as a co-host." I said, "Okay."
We got
and you're
hooked.
Right. That was 9 years ago.
Yeah, we got you hooked right off the bat. Well, Ed Riddell, as you heard, is here, and so is Cal Carson.
I don't know how the heck did I get in this.
I forget. How did
we started getting Mac calls.
We got
Mac
calls.
Right.
But Cal and I didn't know each other at the time, did we?
Had no idea who we were.
But you guys were working on the same team. The same
team.
We were kind of in the same organization. You know, that's
a massive organization called HP or EDS.
I used to walk by Gary's office and, and I would, junior collect and go on down the
street. Right.
But I had no idea he was on the radio.
Actually, we were in the same group.
Yeah, we were in the same group, but, we had no idea who was what. And then I came, you guys had me come in here, and I'm sitting here, and I'm looking over there, and I see EDS on their laptops, and I'm looking on my laptop, and they're looking at EDS. At the end of the show, it's like, "You work for EDS?" "No, I just carried this laptop around."
That was one of those stolen laptops that we had. Okay.
One of the many happy coincidences that has brought all this talent together. And let's start focusing some of that talent on helping people who are waiting on the phones right now. Karen, thank you so much for waiting patiently out there in Rochester Hills. How can we help you with the Internet Advisor?
Hello. Good afternoon. I've got an issue with the Google search engine on our desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
We're using Google Chrome and Mozilla Firefox as our browsers.
Yes.
And it happens on both.
Okay.
Probably have some sort of malware on our computer, but haven't been able to find out what to do about it.
And the symptom is?
It's when I do a search, it redirects me to another site.
Okay.
I do a search like for Radio Shack.
Right.
And it gets me.
It hijacks it.
It hijacks it.
Yeah, it doesn't let Google do the searching, and then it hijacks it and takes it. Where does it take you to, by the way?
When I did Radio Shack, it sends me to feedmixer.org, and they've also sent us to LiveSearch.
Yeah, what it's done is it's got its own little clientele that it want to feed it to. It might be symptomatic, though, guys, of a bigger problem.
Well, what have you tried to do to remove this? Have you scanned it with antivirus? Have you downloaded any special software?
I'm using AVG Internet Security 2013.
Okay. Very good software,
good,
by the way.
Good. Yep.
And we have uninstalled Firefox and reinstalled it again, and it still hasn't helped.
Right. Yeah, that's not where the problem is, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's further down in the system.
Right. So, Cal, do you have any insight? Because I know I'm going to give my standard answer.
Well, I would just go with the easy fix, and I would just reset it back to the browser to its default settings and see if that makes the problem go away. I mean, she may have inadvertently just clicked on something and may not even have a virus.
But it's both browsers.
Well,
both the Chrome and the Firefox are responding.
We don't use Internet Explorer, so I couldn't tell you if it does it.
It probably would do the same thing.
So it's probably redirecting all network traffic.
I think so.
It's a Trojan or malicious software. And I would download. Well, how long has it been on there? How long has this been happening?
It's been happening for over a year.
Okay.
Well, then that's really embedded.
That takes away a few tools that we would have. Right?
Have you downloaded a piece of software called like Malwarebytes? It's a software that we mentioned on the air quite a bit, and because this has been on your computer so long, I would also recommend Malware's anti-rootkit as well. So if you were to go to our website, internetadvisor.net, it's a free utility. Internetadvisor.net is the website, and you may have to do this from someone else's web or someone else's computer and download these two utilities. On the internetadvisor.net website, select the toolbar or toolkit at the top. It's a link that Foster and I created. Mm-hmm. And in Toolbar or in Toolkit, you'll have anti-malware scanners and anti-rootkit scanners. Underneath each of those separate headings, you'll see an entry for a wonderful company that provides free scanning software called Malwarebytes. Malwarebytes makes an anti-malware scanner, and it's free, and you can download it, install it, and scan it.
But use the link that Ed put in there, because they also have a paid version, and you can get confused.
Correct.
So use the link that Ed has there.
And then Malwarebytes has also provided an anti-rootkit scanner that will... rootkits are something that embed themselves on your hard drive in such a manner that the operating system, Windows NT, cannot find it.
Can't see it at all.
It can't see it at all. It uses special characters. You know when you try typing in a file name or a folder name and you put a parentheses in there or an and symbol and it says you can't use that symbol, that's an illegal symbol, right?
Right.
You can't use that character. It's an illegal one. Well, that's what these rootkits are, is they actually using characters or folders with those special characters, and they bypass the operating system, and so Windows can't even see them.
So what you do then is that...
let's leave her on the phone.
Karen, we'll talk to you off the line, but basically for other people listening, download that and a friend's computer onto a thumb drive.
Okay.
And then bring that back to your computer and install them that way. And we'll talk with you a little bit more offline about that and some other things as well. You're listening to the Internet Advisor. Thanks so much for being here for the Internet Advisor. I want to thank our friends behind the glass. Scott Iometta, thank you so much. And Annie as well, Annie Nichols, who does a great job screening. And Rich Lisinski's in the background there, kind of keeping an eye on the whole thing. Thank you very much to the people behind the glass that make the show work. Our number again, 800-859-0957.
And you know, Foster, Karen that was on the last segment, she had waited a year. And now she wants us to help her take care of a rootkit, which we can do. And we helped her offline a little bit there at the end just to make sure that she had it. But what we want to do is use this opportunity to tell people out there that if you're experiencing a problem, it's not going to get better with age. Right? It's really not.
It's like bad teeth.
It took, it just takes a couple.
So.
It takes a couple tools out of the toolbox, and one of them is an important one: system restore.
And system restore, that's the magic wand. Eddie, you called it the Wayback Machine, I think, once before.
I used to call it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it, what essentially is allows you, if you have a Windows operating system, to go back to the last good system that you had before the problem happened.
Yep.
And they're marked out in a calendar, a little black square will say you can go back to this point.
But they're not going to go back a year. They probably won't go back much more than a month and a half.
So if it starts happening...
it depends on how big of a system restore file you set up.
That's right.
Will depend on how far back you can go.
How much storage
you
have.
But roughly it'll be
typically
about that
you get somewhere between 30
and 60
days.
But the longer you wait, the digger it deeps. Yes, that
and,
too.
And I wish I'd been able to say it like that.
It's only because you put the wrong emphasis on the right syllable.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to quote you on that the other
there
day.
Is a third component. Ed, you mentioned the malware bytes, anti-malware, and then the malware rootkit from malware bytes. But there's also a little, and I found that this is a cocktail to put together. Combo Fix is another one that you have in the toolkit. Mm-hmm. That really gets
them together,
down.
Right? Is that what you're
saying? If you use them all together, yeah. It's not like one thing will do the silver bullet. Usually it takes a combination. And when you put Combo Mix, for some reason, when you put that together in a combination, bam, it really gets down. Let's go back. We got some other folks waiting online here, and let's talk with them. Say hello to Charlene from Troy. How you doing, Charlene?
Hi, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Very well, my dear. What would you like to do, and how could we help you?
Well, the question I'd like to ask is, I called into my internet provider, and they helped me put all my emails on Windows Explorer, so I could work, open and read them offline. Now, if I terminate my provider, will those emails stay on my computer?
No, well, how did they ask you to do that? How did they do that? Well, what are you using to read your email?
I'm using the provider's email.
You're using the online email.
Yeah.
So who's your provider?
Comcast.
Okay. And you want to bring that email down to your computer.
Well, she said they already did that.
Yeah, they put it on Windows Explorer. So my question is that if I get rid of Comcast, if I terminate them, will the emails still stay on Windows Explorer?
Well, the question I had for you is, when you say it's on Explorer, when you double-click on it, what happens?
Well, then the emails come up, and I can read them even.
Okay,
maybe I'm not online, so the ones that have a link I can't read, but the ones that don't, just have...
No, I understand that. So when you click on it, what opens up? Is it Microsoft Word? Is it Outlook that opens up? I mean, what are you using to view? Is it an Internet Explorer? When you click on the email, because you said it's an Explorer.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think it's Outlook.
And that could be.
Okay, the key thing is this. What is the end? Excuse me, just one quick question. What is the ending, like the dot what at the end of these things? Is it dot HTML? It would be a link.
Well, no, there's no link because I'm not on the internet.
Okay, you know, okay, so you can read these offline.
Offline.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
so the
different.
Real question is, what male client is she using to handle the mail? Because it sounds like Comcast told her how to use a mail client to import all the mail onto her computer itself.
Right.
So that'll be either something like Outlook Express, Outlook. It's a mail client.
What is it, Eudora? What's some of the old
Yeah, whatever. Like but the important thing is you're reading them, keyword, offline, which means
yes.
You do not have to be. That means you got them.
Oh, good.
So let me ask a couple questions, because I think there's a bigger question here that you're not asking. So let me dig in a little bit. Why would you want to change providers?
Well, because there's other ones that provide more a cheaper internet service for the same things that I'm getting.
Okay. So because what we want to do is we want to make sure that people understand. So I'm asking you a question, but to help everybody that's listening, there's access, which is you use Comcast to get access. And then they also provide an email client and an email account. You can get an email account from somebody else and get your access. People sometimes think they're the same, that you have to have the email client from the same provider, and you really don't.
But Comcast does not provide an email client.
They don't provide the client. They provide the account.
Right. Correct. So if you're going to be making the break from Comcast, what Foster and Gary are saying, break away from your tying your email with your internet provider and go with a Gmail account, a Yahoo account, a Hotmail account, all of which are free and independent of your internet provider. And that way you don't have to put all your family and friends through the horror. And it is a pain to say, here's my new email address.
Right.
And then in another year and a half, you change internet providers. Here's my new email address.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It's likely you'll change, you know, over the next 4 to 8 to 10 years, you'll change a couple times.
Well, when you change, if I go to a different provider, don't I automatically just lose my emails?
No.
If they're on their servers. In other words, only if they hang on to it.
But she may have meant.
So here it is.
That was a question she asked. She may have meant, do you lose your email account?
I know I'm going to lose, from my understanding, I'll lose the account with Comcast.
Right.
But I had it on this, you know, the internet, Windows Outlook or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I have, like, a bunch of them on there so I can read them offline.
Mm-hmm.
So, from what you're saying, if I go to, like, say, Gmail, can I still use the same, email address?
No. So Charlene from Troy at Comcast.net. is going to be gone. As soon as you stop paying your bill, they're going to say, bye-bye, see you in 2 years, all right? And then you're going to go to WOW, and then it's going to be Charlene from Troy at WOW.net. And then you're going to stop paying them because they're charging you too much, and they're going to say, bye-bye, see your email's gone. So what we're saying is let's cut your internet address and go with a free internet service provider. But the question is, will she continue to be able to use Outlook? And I think with certain providers, you may have to go with a web-based email system.
Well, but that's Outlook.
No.
Outlook.com?
No. No. Oh. If she wants to go with one of the generics, let's say she goes with Gmail or Hotmail, one of those two, or Windows Live, I should say.
Yeah, Windows
with those generic mail services,
of
those will talk to your mail client, which is Outlook.
You can get them essentially to, they will be a post office address that all your email can be sent to. You'll set that up. You'll set that behind the scenes. I would recommend, to be honest with you right now, Gmail is a good one, and Outlook.com.
Which is the old Hotmail.
Is the old Hotmail or Livemail. They're both excellent. And I think they're both free.
Free.
And they got very good protection. Outlook has just changed to a very nice look. You might want to consider that.
So if you go with...
All I have to do is change my home site to Gmail or to Outlook.com?
Yes. Yeah. Then you're done. Don't make any more changes.
You're going to you're going to go to one of those two services. You're going to establish a new email account there. It'll be Charlene of Troy, Miss Wonderful, at gmail.com. And then from that point on, it doesn't matter what client you have on your computer that you use, it'll talk to that email address and be able to move it for you.
And it also doesn't matter who you buy your access from. Right. And that was
even
the point.
If, even if I switch, I'll still have the Gmail, and
that's
I won't
have exactly.
To
Exactly. You don't have to. They'll offer you the free email from Wow or AT&T or whoever.
Or ABC.com.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Don't bother them. Don't bother with it. All you want is that internet connection. You get that with your account, and you're all done. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call.
That was another good one. Allowed us to say some really good things and remind people out in the listening audience. So
this is a great fear of losing all those emails and pictures and things like that. Back in just a second at our call-in number. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. And thank you very much for joining us here at 800-859-0957. We'll be getting to your call just as soon as we can. We have someone with us right now. Dale is with us. And Dale, you're having a challenge with something that a lot of people are getting their hands on, and that is a tablet. You have a Kindle tablet, Kindle HD, right?
Yes, sir.
And your problem is with what?
My problem is I'm having an issue putting Adobe Flash Player on my new Kindle Fire HD 8.9-inch.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to put a lower version of Flash Player on there, but I can't get the update. It would not let me update to a newer version.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what version are you looking to install?
11.1 to 11.3.
11.1 to 11.3,
and,
okay.
And actually, what happens is you have a Kindle, so that's an Android operating system
right.
for a tablet.
Right.
And we don't believe, Cal, you want to, well, Do you want to talk about the
you're already
the Flash
in.
Player yeah. Flash Player
because I was able to put a new browser. I had to download the Dolphin. It's called the Dolphin browser.
Right.
It's a browser that works with the version of Flash Player that I put on.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a dual browser on my Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to play a certain game or a certain movie, it'll start and then it'll freeze because that Flash Player is not up to date with what it's what I need it for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's back up a bit.
Well, yeah, what happens is Windows has a different version of the latest version on Windows is different than the latest version of Flash for Mac, which is different than the latest version for Flash for Linux, which is different than the latest the latest version of Flash for the Android operating system.
So Windows is like 11 point something.
7.
7. Okay. And the 7. The newest 7. Version for the Android is 10.3.
Okay.
We
now,
believe. Right.
Cal, why don't you tell him
the
rundown.
I'm on Adobe's website, and that's what they're saying.
Yeah. He has
He already has
he
it
already
going.
He already has it.
Okay.
Yeah, he already has it going. The only problem is what Gary just said. There's not the same level version available for the Android platform as it is for like
Windows.
The Windows
they're
platform.
All different, actually.
Yeah.
So
right.
that may be a limitation then, Dale, on your game, because your game seems to be requiring one thing, right?
So you've got the latest of what you can get on the Flash on a Android platform right now. So,
yeah, I have the latest version that I can download, and I've been trying to upload it. I reinstalled it. I installed it again to see if I can get it to work. And nothing.
Well, the issue may not be your Kindle then. It sounds like the issue may be with the game.
And how it senses the version number.
Right.
So you said you've installed 10.3, and it actually works in certain applications, right? Certain websites
Correct.
That require...
Yeah.
Right. 10.3 is the highest version you can get for the Android.
Okay.
11.7 is the highest version for Windows.
Right.
11.7?
Right.
But that's
0.7,
for Windows. 0.7,
but that's Windows,
1,
though.
1 point,
you're, Dale, you're getting caught, and a lot of people... I wanted to have you on just to have people hear this. When you are on these different platforms, there are different builds made for each one of them. And you have run into precisely the problem that some people will run into,
right.
where your particular application, in this case a game, requires a different kind of a version. And unfortunately, on Android, it's not available.
Right, and what they're doing, no, it's the programmers of the game on the website for the browser. They're saying, what version are you? And you're saying, 10.3, but I'm Android 10.3. All they're hearing is, 10.3.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they're not sensing because of the browser type that you have that you're running an Android operating system.
I'm wondering, is it possible, Cal, that you, for instance, you could get a virtual machine that you could download onto the Kindle? and in that run a Windows environment?
Boy, I don't know.
Boy, that's pushing it. I think that's really stretching
it. That's really pushing it. You really want to play that game, Dale.
Yeah. You could do that on a computer, but I could say I'm
running an Android operating system.
Yeah. Okay, Dale. I have no issue on my computer getting it. It's just on the tablet.
It's the programmers of the Flash game. They messed up. They're not sensing your platform as Android browser version.
Or they've said, we are going to create this game with this kind of ActiveX control that they need a higher browser to actually use and play. And they've said, we're not going to make this for the Kindle. We understand that some people have 10.3, but we're just not going to make it for 10.3. We got a richer experience that we can give you. Yeah. If we only allow you to use it with a 11.5 or
this is going to be a little more complicated than most people listening are working with, but just so you're aware, it's not the same language spoken across these platforms. And Dale happens to have gotten caught in the crossfire on one of these. Right. So, Dale, I know we haven't necessarily come up with a solution for you, but hopefully an explanation.
Well, there isn't a solution.
Well, now, there is none.
Until Adobe upgrades their Flash player for the Android operating system, he won't be able to play that game.
Or he can go back to the manufacturer of the game and talk to them. Right, but it's a website. Right. See, the thing is that the versions don't mean anything. So the functionality of an Android 10.3 has the same functionality as a Windows 11.7. Right. It's just that the Windows one had to be patched a whole lot more, so they had to keep on adding numbers to it.
Yeah.
But they should have the same Flash.
And this is the problem across platforms that you'll run into, folks.
Yes.
They don't speak these universal languages. Dale, hope we help you out a little bit. And some of you out there may have confused, but I hope we've shown a little light on that. Yeah. Hey, an old friend of ours from Mansfield, Ohio, Zero Cool, is with us. How you doing, buddy?
Foster Braun. How are you, my friend?
Doing better each day. How are you doing?
God bless you, and God bless your health and getting there, aren't you?
Yep. I've just started on the road back.
My man. I'm really loving this show. Hey, listen, we're talking about JavaScript. And by the way, that intern that's working for you, the gal that took my call, God bless
Annie
her. She's
Nichols.
Working hard.
Yes,
and
she is.
And she's very friendly.
She's wonderful.
Yeah. We tell people that you can hear
you
her smile.
People don't get the credit they deserve. And I want her to get the credit.
Good.
Yeah.
Screeners and producers are unsung heroes of our program.
We
sound the way we do very often because they're really, really good at what they do. So,
God bless you guys. You guys are great.
Thank you. I love it.
So, listen. Yes. This is a call about Java and JavaScript. I've talked to you before.
Right.
Yep. And I came up with a solution for this.
Okay.
And that is that people that have Java on their computers need to put it in what's called a guest account.
Okay.
The administrative mode will guarantee you are in trouble.
You're talking about the user.
Yeah,
because unfortunately what most of us do and what a lot of the manufacturers do when they ship the computer because they don't want to get all those calls saying, why won't my game install, is they give everyone administrative rights.
Right.
And if they gave them user rights or guest rights, he's absolutely right.
Absolutely. And as I said earlier when I talked to you guys, if you're a business, you should have one node only. And you're excellent when Ed Rudell said this, isolate the incident. Absolutely great, Ed. You get kudos from my house. Isolate the incident, and one node gets attacked.
Right.
And that's it.
Yep.
Because nobody else has got Java running on their script.
Right. So now the key then you're telling us, Zero Cool, is that when you got an account, that you should generally run your account, your user account, under guest if you're using Java?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And that will, by the way, folks, you may not know the particular instance now, but we spoke about this before and have on a number of occasions. People are having trouble with Java updates and a lot of problems making Java work. Java, J-A-V-A, is a language that helps certain kinds of programs to run. So, Zero, as always, thank you for being a big help.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, take care, my friend. Have
Say
a good day.
Say hi to Ben Carpenter.
Oh, will do. Another old friend of ours as well, Ben Carpenter, out there in Adrian.
You know, and this is, and he mentions Java, but this is one of the reasons why also Flash and Java require to be updated so frequently on your computers is because there's so many vulnerabilities in it, and why Apple refuses to let at least Flash.
So how does running in the guest mode protect you from that then?
Well, because you have to request privileges of the computer, and so you'll probably get prompts that basically say this application requires access to your computer, or you know,
you'll be aware
or just flat out not work, and you may get error messages that this website is trying to
access. But you'll be protected at least from something being installed that could cause a problem.
And that's one way to do it. You don't have to do it that way, but he brings up a very good point that it's adding another layer of protection.
Kind of a chastity belt.
It wasn't exactly the analogy I was just going to think of.
I mean, that really scares me because it means my computer is not chaste.
Yeah, but that is exactly it. You've been running around the network, and who knows what you've been
pulling. It puts a padlock on there. It certainly does. You know, and the same is true for... That's did not come
all right,
out.
All right, let's keep going.
So we've raised back to a whole new level now.
Well, you know, they used to say the same thing about viruses. A lot of viruses spread because so many computers have high privileges on it. The user accounts have privileges.
Yeah,
true,
exactly.
High
That's
privileges.
True. Yep. All right,
so
Steve from Ashtabula and Chris from Ann Arbor, we'll be back with you to wrap up with your questions and some tips from Microsoft on how you can stay safe while you're on your mobile phone. Very important security messages from them this week as well. Back with that with the Internet Advisor and Our Lady of the Phones, Annie Nichols. Thank you so much for allowing us into your lives with the Internet Advisor. And by the way, throughout the week, we're available as well. If you go to InternetAdvisor.net, click on the Contact Us form, and you can send us information. By the way, I've had email about our forums and what's happened with them. We ran into a problem when there was an update to the forums, and spam got in and just flooded it. Within minutes of it being up, we had hundreds, almost thousands of spam messages in there. So what we had to do was to pull that down. We've been experimenting with some new forums. I hope, I've been in a busy week list last week, and I hope to have it up this coming week so that you can get back in and start using the forums as well. But in any case, in the meantime, in between time, send us an email through the Contact Us form,
you know,
which is at internetadvisor.net.
Normally, we don't get spam because all we have to do is say Gary Baker's affiliated with us, and spammers just leave.
They fly.
Oh, do not throw that out there, man.
Thank you, Ed, for sticking up for me.
He's going to get nailed. You're going to have someone that's going to take it as a personal challenge. You did that on purpose.
Some script kid. it's the old Apple. The old Apple version.
Look at him smile. Just kind of quickly. Right, let's go to the guest.
We have other resources at internetadvisor.net as well. And if you notice under the news items, we have show notes, which have links to information. But also under the news headlines there on the page, we have what's new in Windows 8.1. There's a lot of stuff coming up. We'll be talking about more in coming weeks. Mobile safety tips from Microsoft. Is a very good one. Look at that, please. It talks about things that are really important since we're doing so much more on our smartphones nowadays, that we're much more vulnerable to the kind of phishing attacks and things like that that we talked about with our friend Len Michaels during the first part of the program.
Well, phishing will get you anywhere, but
there's a lot of stuff.
There was a time when you weren't really sure about something, you could go to your phone and pull it up and you wouldn't have the same problems because nothing, you know, was built to attack the phones. Now that there's so many of them, they're trying to build.
It's now become that big target.
The big target.
Yep. We talked about
and
it
also comes through text and messaging and Facebook.
Exactly. That's right. Many ways. So look at that list of items. They're very important. Let's get back to make sure we talk with Steve from Ashtabula. Hi, Steve. How are you doing, and what can we do to help you here?
I'm doing great, and I appreciate your program very much.
Sure.
Great. Thank you.
I'm running Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
I had Internet Explorer on, and I bought into the thing about Google being quicker and everything, and I downloaded that and have been using it, and I don't like it.
Okay, you don't like Chrome.
I'd like to go back to IE. And also in my updates, my Windows updates, one of my updates is to download Internet Explorer 10.
Okay, good.
Which I have tried.
Ah.
And it downloads fine, reboots the machine, pops back up, but says there's a problem and it will not run. And I've looked in my program folders.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one in both my my regular folder and the I'm running a 64 system. And there's one in there. And if I try clicking on either one of those icons, either one of those will bring up Internet Explorer.
Wait, are you dual booting, are you saying? A 64 and a 32-bit system?
No, I have a 64-bit system.
But you know how
in the program files it shows you two different program files in there?
Oh, for internet?
Yeah, you have a 32-bit and a 64. So,
right.
First thing I would do is, if it was me, I would... what version of Windows are you running?
Seven.
If it was me, you probably have Internet Explorer 8 on there or 9. I would go into your control panel, programs and features, and then what I would do is go in there and actually uninstall Internet Explorer, the version that you have right now, because it'll put the original version that was shipped from Microsoft. And
it'll put it right back on.
And it'll, of course, when you run an update again, it'll actually reinstall it because it's obviously damaged.
Should he delete Google Chrome first before he...
No, he needs a working browser on there.
Yeah.
All right. Because
Internet Explorer is not working
well. Also, when I try to do that, it pops up and tells me that it's being controlled by, what is it, Taskmaster or whatever it is it controls. I don't have the permission to do it under my admin permissions. It's something that the machine has control over, and it will not let me delete that program.
So now you're saying delete Chrome?
Don't delete.
You might be using the wrong term. I said uninstall.
Okay. Or maybe I should try that then. Okay.
Out of
the program file?
Yeah, go into Control Panel under Programs and Features, and then you'll see in there that you have... Here, I'm bringing it up on mine right now.
It's not even showing up on my control panel under my program.
Well, you have to select Windows Features, I believe. Yeah. On the left-hand column, here I'm bringing it up on mine. I'm sorry, I just don't got this.
So there's a couple things that we want to talk about. You can have two browsers on your computer. In fact, you can even have them both open at the same time. I frequently do that.
Right.
Because there's some sites, ESPN, my son and I, who's 14, he says, I like Chrome. And I said, well, you also don't like Chrome for these reasons. And he goes, yeah, I know, but I don't like IE more. So I said, okay. But there's, like, ESPN, he can't see certain things on the ESPN site using Chrome. So then he flips over to IE, and he can see everything. Right?
Correct.
So there's certain sites you know about. There's other sites you don't know about.
I
tend to use IE more just because I want to, and I'll put up with the problems with IE because there's problems with everyone.
So but having two browsers...
You can have them both open.
We always recommend two browsers as a backup for a diagnostic purpose.
But the thing is, which one is your default? In Internet Explorer, once you get it working, you can select Tools, Internet Options, and you have the ability there to select... Always check to make sure that Internet Explorer is the default browser. Right.
Yeah. Google will do the same thing, too. Chrome will do the same thing, too.
Now, let me step back. There was one thing. Before you actually try to uninstall Internet Explorer, go into Control Panel underneath Internet Options and then attempt to repair it.
Okay.
Or reset it. I'm sorry. So Control Panel, Internet Options, and that's the same as go. And then the
reset
last
the
tab.
Default.
You go to the Advanced tab, and then you have the ability to select resalt. Yeah, salt the fields and reset.
Salt.
Reset the salt.
The default.
Yeah, reset the default.
Right.
And that might repair the version of Internet Explorer you're running right now.
Okay.
If that's working the way it is, you do not need to install Internet Explorer 10 right away because obviously that's failing. You could deal with that later at another time.
Right. You can even get rid of that installation period, the Internet Explorer 10, if you wanted to, just to clear that out of the field. And then, as Ed's saying, go into go into your Internet Explorer, Options, Advanced Features, Reset to Defaults. If that fixes it, shazam. If it doesn't, go back in and pull out the Internet Explorer 10s, and then go back under that Advanced Features, Options, in the Control Panel, Eddie.
Yeah, it's underneath, I think, General.
Yeah.
Or one of them, the basic... basically, always check to make sure Internet Explorer is your default. Is that where you're going?
But the other one, too, was if he wants to uninstall Internet Explorer there...
Oh, you go
then to... Then when he goes back and reboots the machine, am I right, it will look for an Internet Explorer to install?
No, next time it does download updates or something
Download... Or you can go to Microsoft.
Yes.
And you can download Windows 8.
Kel, you had something?
No, I'm fine.
He's just watching this. He's a Mac user.
He's amazed.
Just watching this.
He's just watching in amazement.
He's just watching how complicated it is on Windows.
The only thing I was going to say was that when you go to install Internet Explorer, the first time you open it up, it's going to say, do you want to be the default browser?
Right.
And at that time, he can check it and say, yes, make Internet Explorer default, and it'll lock it down.
That's an important
and
step.
And just keep Chrome around, however, for diagnostic purposes. That's all.
Yeah, I use it for that. But like you said, it's kept me from getting to some websites that I like.
And, exactly.
You know, so I thought,
exactly. So having the other one around will help you do that. Hey, thanks for your call. I hope it took a little while to do it, but I hope we helped a whole bunch of people in the process as well. We got some folks standing by. We'll try to get to you after the program is over, so hang on the phone lines, please. And for the rest of you, thank you so much for participating in the program. Sunday night, I'll have the podcast up, and if you wanted to listen to any particular part of the show, you can grab it there and find some of the advice and take some notes. And for the rest of you who are listening to us on our network, the Michigan Talk Network, thank you so much for doing that. And you can participate as well by going to internetadvisor.net, finding the information here in our show notes, and contacting us through the Contact Us button. Once again, thanks to the folks behind the glass, Scott Armetta, Rich, and Annie, the Princess of the Phone. Have a good weekend. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally-produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.